Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 950. Shock to the System. Further reflections on the Breitbart Axis. This is being recorded on March 16th of the year 2017. We're going to be once again taking a look at some of the outright Nazis and fascists, alt-right, who have come to power courtesy of, at one level, the Trump and Confabunda, and at another level, Breitbart itself. The last two shows have been about walking the snake with Breitbart. We're going to recap some information from that and 946, and take a look at some very scary things as well. I have hoped to skip doing a show on Bernie Sanders and his efforts in and of themselves. There is so much going on, including things in foreign countries. But some of the developments in the Trump administration and some of the things that Bernie Sanders has been involved with, and some of the people behind his political ascendancy, such as Karl Rove, whose American Crossroads super PAC was channeling money to the Bernard Sanders campaign, I think warrants another show. I'm going to touch on some of the things that have been happening that relate to Bernie Sanders. I think that whatever his personal viewpoint and whatever his own psychological motivation, the things that he is doing perhaps unwittingly pose an enormous threat in the context of what Paul Krugman referred to as the white nationalists, unquote, who are in charge of the U.S. government at this point. Before we get into Breitbart and some of the scary people who have morphed from the Karl Rove Grover Norquist Islamist slash Muslim Brotherhood faction of the GOP to a Islamist Muslim Brotherhood slash Muslim Brotherhood slash faction of the Democratic Party, courtesy of people like Bernie Sanders and Tulsi Gabbard and others. We're going to touch on that in this program, more about it in the next program, because I think the potential results are catastrophic, and I think it's going to be important to take a look at how this is going on. I'm kind of annoyed at that, but I think that lurking behind the grandfatherly appearance of Bernie Sanders and the altogether understandable youthful enthusiasm for some of the things that he says, I myself am in agreement at an abstract level with most of the policy positions that he has taken. I'd love to see single-payer health care and free or virtually free college education for young people, and a re-regulation, an effective re-regulation of Wall Street and the financial industry. But Bernie Sanders is, I suspect, a ringer. In fact, no, I don't suspect it. I know he's a ringer, whether or not he realizes what he is doing or whether he is just hewing to his Trotskyite socialist roots. And we're going to go into that in our next show. I think that the Bernie bots are unwittingly laying the groundwork for something truly awful. When I talk about shock to the system, that is what people like Steve Bannon, many of the philosophers on whom he relies, people like Julius Evola, associated with Mussolini and the SS, and the linchpin of what Kevin Coogan referred to as the order. They feel that civilization is in the last stages of a decline and that what we need is a shock to the system. And that should scare the living you-know-what out of people, because these are folks who are in a position to administer a shock to the system. In For the Record 948 and our last show 949, we went into artificial intelligence and Cambridge Analytica and the role that big data, social media, the internet, and artificial intelligence are playing in the shaping of messaging and cognitive input and cognitive landscaping for the rise of a technocratic fascism, something I've spoken about many times in the past. There is another article in The Guardian, the same Guardian that published the article by Carol Cadwallader that we looked at in For the Record 948 and 949. This from The Guardian of March 13th of 2017, an article by Olivia Solon, S-capital-S-O-L-O-N. The title of the article, Artificial Intelligence is Ripe for Abuse, Tech Researcher Warns, A Fascist's Dream. Subtitled, Microsoft's Kate Crawford tells South by Southwest that society must prepare for authoritarian movements to test the, quote, power without accountability, unquote, of artificial intelligence. I believe they already have. Continuing. As artificial intelligence becomes more powerful, people need to make sure it's not used by authoritarian regimes to centralize power and target certain populations, Microsoft researcher Kate Crawford warned on Sunday. In her South by Southwest session titled, Dark Days, Artificial Intelligence and the Rise of Fascism, Crawford, who studies the social impact of machine learning and large-scale data systems, explained ways that automated systems and their encoded biases can be misused, particularly when they fall into the wrong hands. Quote, just as we are seeing a step function increase in the spread of AI, something else is happening. The rise of ultranationalism, right-wing authoritarianism, and fascism, she said. All of these movements have shared characteristics, including the desire to centralize power, track populations, demonize outsiders, and claim authority and neutrality without being accountable. Machine intelligence can be a powerful part of the power playbook, she said, skipping down. In the Chinese research, it turned out that the faces of criminals were more unusual than those of law-abiding citizens. Quote, people who had dissimilar faces were more likely to be seen by the AI as untrustworthy by police and judges. That is encoding bias, Crawford said. This would be a terrifying system for an autocrat to get his hand on. Crawford then outlined the nasty history of people using facial features to justify the unjustifiable. The principles of phrenology, a pseudoscience that developed across Europe and the U.S. in the 19th century, were used as part of the justification of both slavery and the Nazi persecution of Jews. With AI, this type of discrimination can be masked in a black box of algorithms, as appears to be the case with a company called Faceception, for instance, a firm that promises to profile people's personalities based on their faces. In its own marketing material, the company suggests that Middle Eastern-looking people with beards are, quote, terrorists, unquote, while white-looking women with trendy haircuts are, quote, brand promoters, unquote. Another area where AI can be misused is in building registries, which can then be used to target certain population groups. Crawford noted historical cases of registry abuse, including IBM's role in enabling Nazi Germany to track Jewish, Roma, and other ethnic groups with the Holerith machine, H-O-L-L-E-R-I-T-H, and the Book of Life used in South Africa during apartheid. Donald Trump has floated the idea of creating a Muslim registry. Quote, "We already have that," said Crawford. "Facebook has become the default Muslim registry of the world," she said, mentioning research from Cambridge University that showed it is possible to predict people's religious beliefs based on what they like on the social network. Christians and Muslims were correctly classified in 82% of cases, and similar results were achieved for Democrats and Republicans, 85%. That study was concluded in 2013. Since that time, artificial intelligence has made huge leaps. Crawford was concerned about the potential use of AI in predictive policing systems, which already gather the kind of data necessary to train an AI system. Such systems are flawed, as shown by a RAND Corporation study of Chicago's program. The predictive policing did not reduce crime, but did increase harassment of people in, quote, hotspot areas, unquote. Earlier this year, the Justice Department concluded that Chicago's police had for years regularly used, quote, unlawful force, unquote, and that black and Hispanic neighborhoods were most affected. Another worry related to the manipulation of political beliefs or shifting voters, something Facebook and Cambridge Analytica claim they can already do. Crawford was skeptical about giving them credit for Brexit and the election of Donald Trump, but thinks that what the firm promises, using thousands of data points on people to work out how to manipulate their views, will be possible in the next few years, unquote. "This is a fascist's dream," she said. "Power without accountability," unquote. Such black box systems are starting to creep into government. Palantir is building an intelligence system to assist Donald Trump in deporting immigrants. "It's the most powerful engine of mass deportation this country has ever seen," she said. Palantir, something very, very well known to regular listeners to this program. I did a program about Palantir, whose principal stockholder is Peter Thiel, and I did a show about the Gruppenhobbit. They're supposed to be just a wonderful little bunch of people. They call their headquarters the Shire. I would suggest that Mordor would come a little closer to it. And I would also note, although she is skeptical about Cambridge Analytica, I think she has underestimated the danger. It's not that Cambridge Analytica and Facebook by themselves gave Donald Trump the White House, but in combination with other things such as WikiLeaks, such as Roger Stone, such as the FBI under James Comey, and quite frankly, the role played by Bernie Sanders and his followers, who then basically basically handed the baton, perhaps unwittingly, off to Roger Stone, WikiLeaks, and their Cyber October surprise crowd. Back in July of 2010, I did, for the record, 718, in which I noted Facebook, the intelligence community, and fascist and slash underground Reich links to it, and I noted the incredible possibilities for all sorts of awful things. Then in, for the record, 946, in your Facebook part two, I noted that those have become reality. Facebook's political and news departments are being run by a woman named Campbell Brown. She is an associate of Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, and also a fellow named Tucker Bounds, who was the spokesperson for the McCain-Palin campaign in 2008. You start combining big data, artificial intelligence, people like that, people like Peter Thiel, who sits on Facebook's board and is the principal stockholder in Palantir, and you have a whole lot of trouble. We'll talk more about some of this in weeks to come, but again, I've been warning about technocratic fascism. I have told people over and over, you know, in terms of Snowden, not only has most of the, what alarmed people about Snowden's quote revelations been known for years, but the NSA is literally the last goddamn thing you should be worrying about in the high-tech world. You should be worrying about just about everything else, the Internet of Things, Google, Facebook, and did I mention Facebook, other social media companies that are harvesting data on every aspect of people's lives. NSA doesn't give a flip about most people. These people give a flip about everybody and everything, and they are gaining all of the information they need. And most people, so sadly, young people are giving it to them and then getting bent out of shape about Snowden's disclosures, Snowden being the CIA, Snowden being the point man of an op which resulted in the new Cold War, and past the point, the election of Donald Trump. I've been warning about this for a long time. All I can say is, not I told you so, but, oh, brother, Katie barred the door. Thinking this Crawford at South by Southwest. Note what she's talking about, this last sentence here. This is a fascist's dream, she said. Power without accountability. That from a Microsoft researcher at South by Southwest, not from Dave Emery, who's a conspiracy theorist, unquote. Shock to the system. More reviewing something that we looked at in For the Record 946. One of the influences on Steve Bannon and also apparently on the White House is a programmer named Curtis Yarvin, Y-A-R-V-I-N. He is a self-proclaimed neo-reactionary and a herald of the, quote, dark enlightenment, unquote. He blogs under the name Mencius, M-E-N-C-I-U-S, Moldbug, M-O-L-D-B-U-G. From Politico of February 7th of 2017, reviewing an article by Eliana, E-L-I-A-N-A, Johnson, and Eli Stokols, S-T-O-K-O-L-S, What Steve Bannon Wants You to Read. Bannon's readings tend to have one thing in common: the view that technocrats have put Western civilization on a downward trajectory and that only a shock to the system can reverse its decline. And they tend to have a dark, apocalyptic tone that at times echoes Bannon's own public remarks over the years, a sense that humanity is at a hinge point in history. His ascendant presence in the West Wing is giving once obscure intellectuals unexpected influence over the highest echelons of government. Skipping down. Before he emerged on the political scene, an obscure Silicon Valley computer programmer with ties to Trump backer and PayPal co-founder, and I would add Facebook member, board of directors member, and chief investor in Palantir, Peter Thiel, was explaining his behavior. Curtis Yarvin, Y-A-R-V-I-N, the self-proclaimed neo-reactionary, unquote, who blogs under the name Mencius Moldbug, attracted a following in 2008 when he published a wordy treatise, among other things, that, quote, nonsense is a more effective organizing tool than truth, unquote. That is very interesting indeed. Skipping down. Moldbug's dense, discursive musings on history. What's so bad about the Nazis, he asks in one 2008 post that condemns the Holocaust, that questions the moral superiority of the Allies, including a belief in the utility of spreading misinformation that now looks like a template for Trump's approach to truth. Quote, to believe in nonsense is an unforgeable demonstration of loyalty. It serves as a political uniform. And if you have a uniform, you have an army, unquote. Skipping down. He associates, Moldbug that is, he associates democracy with war, tyranny, destruction, and poverty. Mo Bug, who does not do interviews and could not be reached for this story, has reportedly opened up a line to the White House, communicating with Bannon and his aides through an intermediary, according to a source. You know, when perhaps on first glance, this is counterintuitive, and I think one might be inclined to dismiss what he said, that the nonsense is a more effective organizing tool than the truth. Very quickly, and hopefully we will come back to this in the future, I remain scratching my head over the success of the almost satanically named Truther movement. With many years, as many listeners know, I work a day job and I have decades, plural, experience in the building trades. And if I had not seen people walking around chattering about a controlled demolition of the World Trade Center and an implosion and so forth, I would not have believed that anyone could believe in something like that. Suffice it to say for the time being that not only is every aspect of the Truther hypothesis or Truther hypotheses demonstrably false, but they are physically impossible. There is, on the other hand, the most profound evidence linking the GOP, the Bush administration, and also elements like CIA, as well as the underground right to the Muslim Brotherhood, to the Muslim Brotherhood branch of the Republican Ethnic Heritage Establishment founded by, that is to say, the Islamic branch founded by Karl Rove and Grover Norquist. There is the firmest link to connecting those to the events of September 11th. Just For the Record 356, For the Record 415, For the Record 454. Go to a library, take a look at the Wall Street Journal of April 18th of 2002. There's a full-page story on page A4. I really, at one level, found myself infuriated by it, but even more than that, baffled by the success of the Truther movement. And then Curtis Yarvin's association or assertion here, with which I was not familiar, struck home. And I think really it is quite incisive and in many ways quite brilliant. Nonsense is a more effective organizing tool than the truth. The thing is, if you are going to try to organize people around the truth, they have to be able to wrap their minds around the nature of that truth. And that often it can be quite complex and therefore compounding. On the other hand, if you can hoodwink a bunch of jizz heads into explaining or believing in something that is completely ridiculous, you don't have to get them to wrap their minds around it, because there is no real thinking as such to be done. There is no analysis to be done. It's sort of like a riot after the hometown sports team wins a championship. You know, the Lakers win the NBA championship. People who ordinarily might not overturn cars or smash windows, get drunk, and they feed off the power of their fellow idiots, you know. Should I smash that window with a brick? Nah, that's not a good thing to do. Lakers, hey, smash the window with a brick. Should I turn over this car and set it on fire? Well, that's not a good thing to do. Hey, Lakers, turn over the car, set it on fire. It really can be nonsense. That is a very effective, because it is a mutually reinforcing organizing tool. More about that. But note that the people that Steve Bannon has elevated believe that the system needs a shock. That is scary. Among those is Julius Avila, again with links to Mussolini and the SS, reviewing quickly from the New York Times of February 12th of 2017, fascists too lax for a philosopher, cited by Bannon, by Jason Horowitz, talking about Julius Avila, and we talked about him and his links to Mussolini, the SS, Nazi occultism, etc., in For the Record 947. Skipping down in this article, changing the system, Avila argued, was, quote, not a question of contesting and polemicizing, but of blowing everything up. unquote. Again, we now have people like this in the position to do just that. Exactly what the shock to the system may be, we will see. More depth on Stephen Bannon from the Huffington Post of March 4th of 2017. Bear in mind that this guy is now the preeminent guy on the National Security Council, and as we will see, along with third-generation Hungarian Nazi Sebastian Gorka, he, that is Bannon, presides over a parallel NSC. More about that in a minute. Article from the Huffington Post of March 4th of this year, 2017, by Paul Blumenthal and J.M. Rieger, R-I-E-G-E-R. This stunningly racist French novel is how Steve Bannon explains the world, subtitled The Camp of the Saints tells a grotesque tale about a migrant invasion to destroy Western civilization. Excerpting briefly, The Camp of the Saints, which draws its title from Revelation 29, is nothing less than a call to arms for the white Christian West to revive the spirit of the Crusades and steel itself for bloody conflict against the poor black and brown world without and the traitors within. One more time. The Camp of the Saints is nothing less than a call to arms for a white Christian West to revive the spirit of the Crusades and steel itself for bloody conflict against the poor black and brown world without and the traitors within. The novel's last line links past humiliations tightly in its own grim parable about migration. The fall of Constantinople, Waspe's unnamed narrator says, is a personal misfortune that happened to all of us only last week. That is a reference to the author of the book. Very quickly, Stephen Bannon, President Donald Trump's chief strategist and the driving force behind the administration's controversial ban on travelers, has a favorite metaphor he uses to describe the largest refugee crisis in human history. It's been almost a Camp of the Saints-type invasion into Central and then Western and Northern Europe, he said in October 2015. The whole thing in Europe is all about immigration, he said in January 2016. It's a global issue today, this kind of global Camp of the Saints. It's not a migration, he said later that January. It's really an invasion. I call it the Camp of the Saints. When we first started talking about this a year ago, he said in April of 2016, we called it the Camp of the Saints. I mean, this is Camp of the Saints, isn't it? Bannon has agitated for a host of anti-immigrant measures. In his previous role as executive chairman of the right-wing news site Breitbart, which he called a platform for the alt-right, the online movement of white nationalists, he made anti-immigrant and anti-Muslim news a focus. But the top Trump aide's repeated references to the Camp of the Saints, an obscure 1973 novel by French author Jean Raspail, R-A-S-P-A-I-L, reveal even more about how he understands the world. The book is a cult favorite on the far right, yet it's never found a wider audience. There's a good reason for that. It's breathtakingly racist. Quote, this book is racist in the literal sense of the term. It uses race as the main characterization of characters, said Cécile Aldui, A-L-D-U-Y, professor of French at Stanford University and an expert on the contemporary French far right. It describes the takeover of Europe by waves of immigrants that wash ashore like the plague. The book, she said, reframes everything as the fight to death between the races. Upon the novel's release in the U.S. in 1975, the influential book review magazine Kirkus Reviews pulled no punches. Quote, the publishers are presenting the Camp of the Saints as a major event, and it probably is in much the same sense that Mein Kampf was a major event. Again, another influence on Steve Bannon. That article in its entirety is in the written description for the Record 950, which will be published within a couple of days of this recording on March 16th.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Now, more about people who would perhaps be in the position to determine the shock of the system. Now, in connection with the very first story that we read about Microsoft researchers Ms. Crawford and her discussions of artificial intelligence and big data and how that would be, quote, a fascist dream, unquote. Bear in mind what we looked at in 948 and 949 about Cambridge Analytica and Facebook and some of the things they're doing with artificial intelligence and big data, and also the bots, the microbots that are poised to amplify any major event, such as, quote, shock to the system, all over the Internet and all over the world. And once again, who is the point person in the Trump White House for counter-jihadism, quote-unquote? New York Times, February 24, 2017, by Stephen Simon and Daniel Benjamin. We went into this in a big way in For the Record, program number 948. The new point man for the Trump administration's counter-jihadist team is Sebastian Gorka, G-O-R-K-A, an itinerant instructor in the doctrine of irregular warfare and former national security editor at Breitbart. Stephen K. Bannon and Stephen Miller, the chief commissars of the Trump White House, have framed Islam as an enemy ideology and predicted an historical clash of civilizations. The way that Gorka and Bannon and others are casting Muslims and Islam is precisely the way that not only ISIS, but also the Muslim Brotherhood behind the scenes, behind their wonderful egalitarian facade, and it's just that. That is the way they are casting the West's views on Islam. Sami Al-Aryan, the top Bush aide, the investigation of whom led to Operation Green Quest, and the busting of a number of institutions and individuals linked to Grover Norquist, to Karl Rove, to the Bush administration, to Arbusto Energy, and to the elder George Bush as well, and that was swept under the rug. Sami Al-Aryan discussed moving to the U.S., which is the center of, quote, the conspiracy against Islam, and Sami Al-Aryan, now elevated to the status of hero slash political martyr by the so-called progressive sector. He is very close to the Al-Taqwa and Muslim Brotherhood milieu. And again, people like Sebastian Gorka, people like Donald, like Steve Bannon and others, and also Donald Trump, are presenting the view of Muslims and Islam that the Islamic fascists agree with completely. It is just exactly what they want. And more about Sebastian Gorka. We talked about him 2 weeks ago. We're going to talk more about that. From Forward comes this article, March 16th of 2017, a further development of what we have already looked at. This by Lily, L-I-L-Y, Bayer, B-A-Y-E-R, and Larry Kohler, C-O-H-L-E-R hyphen E-S-S-E-S. Exclusive. Nazi-allied group claims top aide Sebastian Gorka as member. Sebastian Gorka, President Trump's top counterterrorism advisor, is a former member of a Hungarian far-right group that is listed by the U.S. State Department as having been, quote, under the direction of the Nazi government of Germany, unquote, during World War II. Leaders of the organization have told the Forward. The elite order known as the Vitezi Ren, V-I-T-E-Z-I, capital R-E-N-D, I believe that it would actually be pronounced something like Ren Vitej, but that is conjecture, was established as a loyalist group by Admiral Miklos Horthy, who ruled Hungary as a staunch nationalist from 1920 to October of 1944. A self-confessed anti-Semite, Horthy imposed restrictive Jewish laws prior to World War II and collaborated with Hitler during the conflict. Ultimately, when he began to waffle, to waver, I should say, with the Red Army advancing on his country, the Arrow Cross organization formally took over leadership of Hungary, which was a Nazi ally. The Arrow Cross's liaison to Adolf Hitler was Laszlo Pásztor, who then jumped to the U.S., the Galen organization, and became the Republican Party's the head of the Republican Party's Ethnic Heritage Outreach Council, a Nazi and parallel network to the Grover Norquist Karl Rove Muslim Brotherhood branch of the Republican Ethnic Outreach Milieu. Laszlo Pásztor was then head of the Free Congress Foundation's Liberation Project, which projected these World War II Nazi allies from the Republican Party and the Galen Org, CIA, and ABN right back into Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union. So it should not come as a surprise to see the likes of Sebastian Gorka once again surfacing. We have talked about him apparently wearing the Vitezhi Rend Medal, but this article, which is excerpted at length, confirms the fact that he is actually a member of that revived organization, which was revived in Hungary after the end of the Cold War. And this places him formally within a resuscitated Nazi organization in Hungary, something that should not come as a great surprise to anyone who has studied the Republican Party and the history of the Cold War. For the record, 465, among others, goes into that. More about Sebastian Gorka, and not surprisingly, he was the founder of a political party in Hungary linked to the fascist Jobbik Party and doctrinaire in its anti-Semitism. We talked about this in, for the record, 948. Again, from the foreword, this of February 24th of 2017, an article by Lily Bayer, B-A-Y-E-R, exclusive, senior Trump aide for key ties to anti-Semitic groups in Hungary. When photographs recently emerged showing Sebastian Gorka, President Donald Trump's high-profile deputy assistant, wearing a medal associated with the Nazi collaborationist regime that ruled Hungary during World War II, the controversial security strategist was unapologetic. Skipping down. An investigation by the Forward into Gorka's activities from 2002 to 2007 while he was active in Hungarian politics and journalism found that he had close ties to Hungarian far-right circles and has in the past chosen to work with openly racist and anti-Semitic groups and public figures. Gorka's involvement with the far right includes co-founding a political party with former prominent members of Jobbik, a political party with a well-known history of anti-Semitism, repeatedly publishing articles in the newspaper known for its anti-Semitic and racist content, and attending events with some of Hungary's most notorious extreme right figures. Skipping down. Think about this in the context of the shock to the system. In the U.S., Gorka, who was appointed deputy assistant to the president on January 20th, is known as a television commentator, a professor, and an alt-right, unquote, writer who describes himself as a counterterrorism expert. He is the point man for the counterterrorism, if one could call it that, of Donald Trump. And again, the views of people like Gorka and Stephen Bannon are just exactly what ISIS and the Muslim Brotherhood want. Skipping down. A close associate of Stephen Bannon, Trump's chief strategist, Gorka is now part of Bannon's key in-house White House think tank, the Strategic Initiatives Group. The newly formed group consists of figures close to Trump and is seen by some as a rival to the National Security Council in formulating policies for the president. Well, that reminds me of is one of the things that Hitler did after he came to power. The entire Nazi party had been structured in parallel to the various ministries and structural landscape of the German government, so that when the Nazis achieved power, they were able to move very quickly because they already had the various branches of the government set up in parallel. Hitler did not fully trust his own generals, so he set up something called the Oberkommando der Heere, or the High Command of the Armies, as a parallel organization to the OKW, the Oberkommando der Wehrmacht, because he didn't really trust his own generals past a point. And this reminds me, seeing that Bannon has set up the Strategic Initiatives Group, sort of a parallel NSC, and that Gorka is part of it, really reminds me of that. And again, with people like this in charge of not only the government, but counterterrorism, unquote. Well, just think about what happens when the shock to the system happens and all of the Freudian slip, the little microbots that we looked at in 949 that are poised on the internet, ready to spring into action in the event of a shock to the system. Last excerpt from that last article, speaking of the Tezi Rend. In 2006, Gorka defended the use of the Arpad flag, which Hungary's murderous Arrow Cross Party used as their symbol. The Hungarian Arrow Cross Party killed thousands of Jews during World War II, shooting them alongside the Danube River and throwing them into the water. Well, they were a Nazi-affiliated group. And again, the liaison between the Arrow Cross and Hitler, Laszlo Pastor, was the head of the Republican Ethnic Heritage Outreach Group, that is the Nazi branch of the Republican Party, set up under the Crusade for Freedom. Something that we're going to have to go into at greater length in our next show. I think in order to do what it is that I want to do, I think we're going to have to, I wouldn't say waste time, but go into the Bernie Sanders phenomenon. Not just his campaign for president, but after his elevation by that campaign to being one of the most visible people in the so-called progressive sector, Bernie Sanders has done some extremely counterproductive things. I noted with a mixture of shock and outrage that during the campaign, Bernie Sanders, who wasn't even a member of the Democratic Party until a little over a year before he ran, and who left the Democratic Party on July 27th of last year, was arguing that all of the primaries should be open primaries. That would permit Republicans to vote in Democratic primaries, noting also that Karl Rove is channeling money, and we'll go into this next week. Karl Rove is channeling money to Bernie Sanders' campaign through Rove's American Crossroads Super PAC. That is most ominous indeed. Something I noted in a post about Bernie Sanders, someone who quite remarkably emerged as a Bernie Sanders booster was none other than Graham E. Fuller. Fuller still is, a very powerful figure. I don't think any proper history of the late 20th and early 21st century would be complete without discussion of Graham Fuller. It was a paper by Graham Fuller that was credited with launching the Iran-Contra scandal. He was the CIA station chief in Kabul, thereby inevitably involved with the setting up of the jihadist movement against the former Soviet Union, which morphed into Al-Qaeda. Its heritage was the Muslim Brotherhood. Graham Fuller also deeply involved with the jihadist movement in the Caucasus. His name crops up in a very prominent way in the background of the Boston Marathon bombing. Graham Fuller also a huge advocate for the Muslim Brotherhood. Then, during the campaign, Graham Fuller wrote about how he was captivated by Bernie Sanders' campaign, like everyone else, unquote, or like everybody else, I can't remember his exact words, considering that the values that Graham Fuller espouses, again, a very important guy, but the values he espouses are the antithesis, the opposite of those endorsed by Bernie Sanders. One really has to wonder why he suddenly was captivated by Bernie Sanders. One wonders if perhaps unwittingly Bernie Sanders was, quote, captivated, unquote, by the likes of Karl Rove, the likes of Graham Fuller, and also Grover Norquist.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
As we looked at in For the Record 941, 942, and 945, one of the driving forces behind Bernie Sanders' campaign was a woman named Tulsi Gabbard. She is a Democratic congressperson from Hawaii. Billed as the first Hindu in Congress, she actually is associated with a branch of the Hare Krishna cult, and her political views are incoherent. She is very anti-Muslim and supported not only Narendra Modi's BJP, but the Hindu nationalist fascist RSS in India, with whom she is networked. That is the organization that murdered Mahatma Gandhi. And she was a big critic of Obama for not being anti-Muslim enough. Curiously, this prominent force behind the Bernie Sanders campaign was then interviewed by Donald Trump for a possible cabinet position. Tulsi Gabbard is viewed with great favor by Steve Bannon. It was Tulsi Gabbard who put Bernie Sanders' name into nomination in the Democratic Convention. She resigned her position as deputy chair of the Democratic Party to campaign for Bernie Sanders. Craig Murray, former UK ambassador to Uzbekistan, claims that he got the information about the hack of the DNC emails that he gave to WikiLeaks from a dissatisfied individual within the Democratic Party who gave him a thumb drive. If, again, capital I, capital F, Murray's assertions are correct, one wonders if that might have been Tulsi Gabbard. Then after the election, after being interviewed by Trump slash Bannon for a possible cabinet position, this Bernie Sanders backer goes to Syria, courtesy of people associated with the Syrian Social National Party. And if that sounds like National Socialism to you, well, that's basically what it is. We went into that in For the Record 945. We'll touch back on that next week. One of the things that is so incoherent about Tulsi Gabbard's political views, again, she's pro-Modi, pro-RSS, anti-Obama, anti-Muslim, viewed with favor by Trump and Steve Bannon, and yet she is championing a guy named Keith Ellison, E-L-L-I-S-O-N, to be chair of the Democratic National Committee. So was Bernie Sanders. More about that next week. As it turned out, Keith Ellison did not become the chair of the Democratic National Committee, but he did become the deputy chair, which was previously held by Tulsi Gabbard. Keith Ellison, as I noted at considerable length and For the Record 941, is heavily networked with the Muslim Brotherhood. That is the same Muslim Brotherhood that is also heavily networked with Karl Rove and Grover Norquist and people like Graham Fuller. Again, Rove having helped to finance Sanders' campaign, Graham Fuller suddenly captivated, unquote, by Bernie Sanders. And as we'll see, Grover Norquist fits into the mix here as well. If there is anything more stupid than the Democratic Party electing a or choosing an African-American Muslim, whatever his relative merits or demerits might be, as one of the faces. Again, he's not the face, but the deputy face, so to speak, of the Democratic Party. It would be difficult to imagine anything more beautifully crafted to further alienate those alienated blue-collar workers who defected from the traditional Democratic allegiance to Donald Trump. You can bet that having an African-American Muslim as the face, as Bernie Sanders and Tulsi Gabbard wanted, of the Democratic Party, would have set him to do, would just set people to doing the varsity rag in places like Cedar Rapids, Iowa, Wichita Falls, Texas, Topeka, Kansas, Dayton, Ohio, and Portland, Maine. They'll be falling out into the streets to do the boogaloo. But, oh, wonderful, we have an African-American Muslim as the face of the Democratic Party. I have nothing against African-Americans or Muslims. However, the Muslim Brotherhood is an Islamic fascist organization whose economics are favored by the World Bank, whose access affiliations jumped from, or actually were co-opted by the CIA at the end of World War II. The Muslim Brotherhood was closely allied with the Third Reich. One of the key people involved with that was a guy named Gerhard von Mende. After the war, von Mende then took his Muslim cadre and put them to work for the CIA. The Muslim Brotherhood worked against the former Soviet Union. It worked as a vehicle for the CIA and other Western intelligence services during the Cold War. And it then spawned, during the closing phase of the Cold War, the Afghan Mujahideen, jihadists in the Balkans, in the Caucasus, and working against China as well in Xinjiang province. And Keith Ellison, as we looked at in For the Record 941, is heavily networked with the Muslim Brotherhood. And that is not all. This guy, again, he's not the face of the Democratic Party, but he is the DNC co-chair, and he was being heavily touted by Bernie Sanders and by Tulsi Gabbard. He also, that is to say, Keith Ellison, in addition to one foot in the Muslim Brotherhood, also has some disturbingly close connections to the Nation of Islam. As we looked at in several programs, the Nation of Islam, I consider that flat out to be an African-American fascist organization. I'm not alone in that. Louis Farrakhan, his behavior vis-a-vis the assassination of Malcolm X, the man whose mantle he has assumed, is more than a little suspicious. There's a For the Record show, Louis Farrakhan and the Politics of Murder. Also, read the book, The Judas Factor, by Carl Evans, Evanzz. Elements of the federal intelligence apparatus were the main pivot, or the main executioners of Malcolm X, but at the operational level, they used elements of the Nation of Islam, and Louis Farrakhan, or Louis X, as he was calling himself at that time, is one of the persons of interest, unquote, that should be investigated in connection with the murder of Malcolm X. How any self-respecting black person who professes to like Malcolm X can then develop affinity for Louis Farrakhan and his Nation of Islam is beyond me. And bear in mind that the guy we're talking about here is now not the face, but the deputy, or not the chair, but the deputy chair of the Democratic Party, and both Bernie Sanders and Tulsi Gabbard were pushing this guy as the chair of the Democratic National Committee. From the Ellison deception by Jared Israel on his Emperor's New Clothes blog, edited by Samantha Criscione, C-R-I-S-C-I-O-N-E, from January 30th of 2017, skipping down. If you are like most people, you probably don't know much about Louis Farrakhan's Nation of Islam, but after you read what I have posted below, you will see that describing it as, quote, radical black Muslims, unquote, trivializes the horror of an apparatus of fascists. Photographic negative images of David Duke and company thus supporting the impression which the nation's David Corn and others wish to convey, that the Ellison controversy is nothing more than the politically motivated harassment of a progressive politician exploiting some minor indiscretions long, long ago. Skipping down. As Pioneer Press, the second highest circulation newspaper in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, reported on June 21st, 1998 article on Ellison's campaign for the office of state representative, Ellison had been the Minnesota coordinator of the so-called Million Man March. Given that Farrakhan's march was a Nation of Islam project in and of itself, it follows that the Minnesota coordinator, i.e. Keith Ellison, was either a member of the Nation of Islam or so close to the Nation of Islam as to be indistinguishable from being a member. Indeed, the June 21st, 1998 article states that at the time, that is, 3 years after Farrakhan's march, Ellison was a member of the Nation of Islam. Quote, Ellison has been active in the community, but not within the established DFL party, the Democratic Party in Minnesota. A member of the Nation of Islam, Ellison was the coordinator of the Minnesota participants in the Million Man March and the subsequent community group that formed, unquote. In the next article in this series, I will present hard evidence that Ellison was already a member of the Nation of Islam in 1995 when he was organizing for Farrakhan's march. During the current debate over Ellison's Nation of Islam ties, nobody else has mentioned the June 21st, 1998 Pioneer Press article, let alone posted it on the Internet. You can read it in Appendix 1, where we have copied it for fair use. Very fair, since it contains information vital for assessing a key politician. Let's get this information out to as many people as possible. Another person, we'll go into this at much greater length next week, but another person who, along with Bernie Sanders and Tulsi Gabbard, was promoting Keith Ellison to be chair of the Democratic National Committee was a guy named Faisal, F-A-I-S-A-L, Gill, G-I-L-L. If that name rings a bell to the veteran listeners, there is a reason for that. We went into him at considerable length in For the Record 467. He is a protege of Grover Norquist, who along with Keith, Karl Rove, was the midwife, so to speak, of the Muslim Brotherhood branch of the Republican Party. He also, that is to say, Faisal Gill, made it to a top post in the Department of Homeland Security, which, considering his ties, is very strange indeed. Head of the DHS at that time was Michael Chertoff, a key Donald Trump supporter. This from NBC News of March 6th of 2017 by Alex Seitz, S-E-I-T-Z, Wald, hyphen W-A-L-D. Vermont elects first Muslim party chair, sends, quote, strong message, unquote, to Trump. Quote, to have a Muslim and immigrant to be the state party chair sends a really strong message to Trump and his type of politics that this is not where the country is at, Gill told NBC News. The White House released a new executive order Monday restricting travel from six Muslim-majority countries after a federal court halted an earlier version. Skipping down. Gill is an outsider in ultra-white, ultra-liberal Vermont in more ways than one. In a state that is nearly 95% white, a Pakistani-born former Republican from Virginia stands out. You bet he does. He's a protege of Grover Norquist. More about that next week. He was also a big backer of Keith Ellison. With people like this moving into the Democratic Party, a lot of people are noting that the things that Trump is doing ultimately will alienate many of the people who backed him. As Goebbels said, we will use democratic means to achieve power, but we will not allow democratic means to be used to remove us from power. I think the shock for the system, whether it's playing the race card with a race war or the Muslim, quote, terrorist card, unquote, or a combination of the two, is poised to be given. And when it happens, the Democrats will be demonized for their association with people like Keith Ellison, Faisal Gill, and others. And the media won't mention things like Gill's association with Wilbur Norquist or Ellison's many connections as well. And that may very well be the shock to the system. However, more about this next week. This concludes For the Record 950, Shock to the System. Further reflections on the Breitbart Axis. This is being recorded on March 16th of the year 2017. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.